Okay, we're beginning on the top of Yetetim and Aleph and the two dots. Amar Mar, Nefesh, the Pasuk says with regards to Mi'ilah, Nefesh, and then the Brayta brought from that, Echad HaYachid, Ve'echad HaNasi, Ve'echad HaMeshuach, Ve'mashmo. The word Nefesh subsumes within it all these different parties. Obviously, it's a reference to the Chata'ot, which by Chatat, we have a differentiation between a Yachid, a Nasi, and a Kohen Mashuach, whereby they each bring different korbanot with regards to a chatat. So here it's saying by mi'ilah, there is no such differentiation that exists. And the Gemara wants to know, she'achol mai. What was the thought process where you would have thought otherwise? The fact that it tells you nefesh comes to tell you that all these people are included means that the Gemara would have thought otherwise or would have thought that maybe it shouldn't be that way. Pshita, nefesh k'tiv. What would you have thought otherwise? The Pasuk says nefesh. Nefesh subsumes within it all of these parties. Why would you ever think to differentiate? So Ma'od Tame, I would have thought, Amar Rachmano, the Pasuk says, Vasher Yiten Mimenu Al-Zar, with regards to the Shemen HaMishcha, that there's a problem if you put it onto a Zar. V'hai Lav Zaru. And when it comes to the Kohen HaMashuach, he's not a Zar because he's anointed by the Shemen HaMishcha, so he's not a foreigner, he's not an outside party with regards to it. Da'im Shach Begaveh, because he was already anointed with it. Kamash Malan, despite that fact, he's still considered to be an outsider, and there is a din of Mi'ilah. So obviously, first of all, it only addresses the Havamina of Kohen Mashuach, does not address Nasi, because Nasi does not require anointing through Shemen HaMishcha, only in cases of controversy, in cases where there's a challenge to the Melucha. But other than that, there is no anointing through the Shemen HaMishcha. And the Havamina is that just because the Kohen HaMashuach has permission to have the Shemen HaMishcha placed on him at one point when he's anointed as the Kohen HaGadol, so maybe therefore he is no longer subject to Mi'ilah, whether that means in particular with regards to the Shemen HaMishcha or in general. And so that's what we come to dispel by saying Nefesh, every person, including the Kohen HaGadol, is subject to Mi'ilah, and the misappropriation of Hekdesh will lead to a Korban Mi'ilah and a Sham Mi'ilot, as well as the requirement to pay a Keren V'chomesh. Now the Gemara goes back to what we discussed yesterday, and just to give some background to that, the Balei HaTosafot spent a lot of time trying to break down the different limudim that we had. In yesterday's daf, the Gemara asked about Mi'ilah, what is the meaning of Mi'ilah? And it says, Im timo mal, ein mal el shinui. Mal means a shinui, a change. What type of change? The Gemara brought two psukim. One pasuk that it brought was ish ish ki tistei ishto umala bo mal, that an individual whose wife is now secluding with another party or has done something to rebel, reject her husband, and so that's bo mala bo mal, that she did something to exchange her husband for another party, for a boel. That's one example the Gemara brings. Ve'omer, and then they bring from Divrei Amin, Vayimalu Belohei Avotehem, Vayiznu Achareya Bealim, that they rejected the God of their forefathers, and they replaced him with the Bealim, with the foreign gods, with Avodah Zarah. So then the Gemara went on and said, we also happen to have a Xereshava between Mi'ilah and Truma, which is essential to a lot of the Limudim, including Shliach, the Dvar Aveir, which is an unusual concept that it does work by Mi'ilah as opposed to anywhere else in the Torah. But there, the Gemara said, we have a Xer Shev of Chet Chet to Truma. So what are the different things that we learn out of each one of those items? So the Balei HaTosafot spent a lot of time trying to narrow down what exactly each one of these Limudim gave us. So first of all, he says that with regards to the Avodah Zarah, that Kamash Malan, that came to teach us that Shinoi Reshut, the changing of possession, is enough of a reason to penalize by Mi'ilah. For example, if you lend it to an individual, something from Hekdesh, you sell it to them, you give it to them, all of those are a change from Reshut of Hekdesh to Reshut of Hediot, and that is considered to be Mi'ilah because of that change in ownership. So that's similar to the example that's brought by Avodah Zarah. That is a person shemishaneh atzmo mirshut haKodesh Baruch Hu umi'avodato lirshut avodat kochavim. He's switching God out for avodah zarah. He's changing from one possession to another possession. He's going from being the worshipper of God to the worshipper of avodah zarah. And there's no hana. There's no benefit in doing such that we know objectively, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Elokim Chaim. Whether you're going to worship Avodah Zarah, then there's no hana in that. So that's one category of Mi'ilah, is Mi'ilah where there's no hana, there's no benefit to you, but the mere fact that you switched from one possession to the other possession, that's enough to be considered Mi'ilah, and that we learn out from Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah gives us that information. And even though one of the possible changes of ownership is a sale, nevertheless, the Balei Tosafot don't consider that to be hana'ah because of the fact that your hana'ah is what you're going to purchase further on with the monies, not from the monies themselves. Although the Rambam himself believes that you cannot have shinui v'shu without hana'ah, there must be hana'ah for there to be mi'ilah, and we'll see later on that we'll discuss that that is the primary aspect of mi'ilah, according to the Rambam, is the issue of hana'ah. Sota tells us that even in situations in which there is no shinui reshut, even in a case where it doesn't leave the possession of Hekdesh, there still can be mi'ilah, because here the woman never leaves the possession of her husband. She might be moreid, she might be rebelling, rejecting her husband, but she can't just leave her husband's possession. She is the wife of this individual. And so her action or activity is in light of the fact that she's still in the reshut of her husband. So this is an example where there is no shinui reshut, as well as the fact that there is no pigam. There's no begam over here because we know that the requirement for a violation of sota is that there has to be that she has mibaladei sheikh, that you have bi'ilah besides your husband's bi'ilah. From here, the Gemara learns that the woman has to have first have had bi'ah with her husband and then bi'ah with the suspect over here in order for it to be sota. And with regards to bi'ilah, once a woman is nive'elet, she's already quote-unquote pagum, and therefore there's no additional pagam in the sense of diminishment of value in that objective sense that a tula versus a bi'ula. Obviously there's a problem over here. There is hana'ah. So this is the example of a case where you have hana'ah, no pagam, no switching of reshut, yet you're still chayav for mi'ilah. Tosafot says, when the Gemara said that the mi'ilah is shinoi, there's two types of shinoi that you can be chayav for. There's a shinoi of hana'ah, even without shinoi reshut, like the gizbar does it, or without pigima, that's still considered to be shinoi, which is similar to the mi'ilah of sota, where there is a slight shinoi, but the shinoi is a shinoi through the hana'ah that you're getting. And there's also a shinoi acher that has nothing to do with hana'ah, but simply an exchange from reshut to reshut. And that's demonstrated by the Avodah Zarah, the Avodat Kochavim. There is a third category, which is the category that's brought to us by Truma. By Truma, the violation is done through Achila, through eating. And that includes Hana'ah and Pgam, because you eat the item, and it's a wasting asset, which is that you're eating it, you're consuming it, it's no longer around. There you have Hana'ah and Pgam. That's a third category of Mi'ilah. That's what the Balei Tosafot laid out yesterday, in terms of the psukim that we brought. That's now going to be emphasized by the Gemara as to why we need all these different limudim. And that is, v'akshe rachmana l'sota, uli obdat kochavim, uli truma. The Torah connects between mi'ilah and sota, mi'ilah and avodah zarah, mi'ilah and truma, mi'ilah and truma. L'sota comes to teach you by sota, afagav de lo pagam. Even though there's no pagam, as we explained, that there is no issue of pagam by the sota, there's an issue of hana'ah, and Tosafot adds the other factor, but there is no shinui reshut over here, there's no changing of possession. Despite that fact, when there is an item that is not a wasting asset, an asset that will not depreciate because of the na'ah that you get from it, then you will be chayav for mi'ilah, solely because of the hana'ah that you render from it, without any pagam, because there is no pagam with regard to these items. So that same thing, gabi hekdesh nami, that's a similar situation with regard to hekdesh. Natna tabat biada ma'ala. If the woman takes a ring from hekdesh, puts it on her finger, and wears it, that's hana'ah that she's getting for it, because she's now walking around adorned with jewelry. How much would she pay to have that jewelry, to rent that jewelry? Now she's getting hana'ah. There's no pigam because these are precious metals that don't deteriorate. And therefore, there is no issue of pigam. Hana'ah is sufficient no shini reshut, it never leaves the reshut of Hekdesh, it's just that she's misappropriating the Hekdesh by utilizing it, getting hana from it. The Aksha Rachman al Avodat Kochavim. Now, with regards to Avodat Kochavim, what does that teach you? Ad itpa shinui. Until there is shinui associated with it. And as we discussed, that means shinui reshut. It means that you're changing possession. Just like by Avodah Zarah, you're exchanging out God for the Avodah Zarah. So this is an example by which you are utilizing the item, not in a way that there is deterioration in the item, not necessarily that you're getting any hana from it. It's the mere fact that you're taking it out of the Reshut of Hekdesh into Reshut of Chulin. That is sufficient grounds to be chayav for Mi'ilah. Gabe Hekdesh, Nami, Ad Bika Bikardom. It's a case where you're using, it seems like a hatchet or a pickaxe. Kardom in Chazal is definitely a monthly functional device. It was used both for digging in the ground as well as splitting logs, chopping or splitting logs. So it's similar to a hatchet, a pickaxe. So here too, you have the same thing, which is that you're utilizing the item and taking it out of the possession of Hekdesh into the possession of Chulin. And the Shiti Bikubetz in the Node Gimel takes out the next two words of Ipkam Upagum. And you can see by the Tosafot that he's learning in that way, which is, Shinui over here doesn't mean a change in the item that's a Pagam. Shinui Rishut in of itself is sufficient grounds for Mi'ilah, even when you get no Hana from it. And that's what we noted already from yesterday's daf, that that was, according to the Bali Tosafot, the Chiddush of Avodat Kochavim. And Vagav Orchash Minon, then in Koroi Shinui, not enough to take it out of Rishut Hekdesh, Ad Shikanesh Rishut Hedyot, until it enters into the possession of Hedyot, V'yizke Bo Hedyot, and he needs to take possession of it. That's how you have a Shinoi Rishut. It's not simply by moving it, you need to take possession of it, and the way you do that is Ayidei Bikua, by actually chopping with it. You have to have some form of Kinyan, or some form of demonstration of change of Rishut, and the Bikua Eitzim actually accomplishes that. Or at least, according to Rav Huna and the Gemara in Baba Metzia, the Bali Tosafot discuss why they bring this chiddush here, even though we don't paskin like Rav Huna, to teach you that it's not enough that you are chayav as a shoel, but you need full irretractable lending in order for it to be chayav in Mi'ilah for switching from moving from one reshut to another reshut. That's how they misappropriate it and become chayav in Mi'ilah. And here, the Shiti Mekubetz takes out Vayivgam Upagum because there, it's not necessary, according to the Bali Tosafot, the Shin Rishut, in of itself, without any Hana, without any Pagam, is enough of a reason to be Chayav in Mi'ilah. And the way that you demonstrate that change in ownership is through the Bikua. Instead of using it for Hekdesh, use it for Chulin. So that's the problem that we cover by Avodah Zarah, which is the ability to change Rishut, even though you have no Pagam over here, and even though you have not necessarily any hana'ah. That's the view of the Bali Tosafot over here, that the kardom that we're speaking about is an issue of shinei reshut, not any pagam, and that's why they changed the girsa. But if you look at the Miyuchas Tarashi, he says that the Gemara here is different than the Gemara before, and over here the Gemara is saying that we learn out pagam from the din of Avodat Kochavim, and that's because the kardom that they're mentioning is a reference back to the Mishnah, where it says that in order to be chayav for mi'ilah by a kardom, you need to be pogame in the kardom. But Tosafot reject that view because then otherwise, what's the point of truma, or what's the limud that you get from truma? Because what's the difference between mazik and pogame? They're both issues where there's diminution in value without any hana'ah. And the case in the Mishnah has to be speaking about a gizbar, and that's why there's no yitziyah mirishut that makes you chayav in mi'ilah, because for the gizbar, everything is in his possession until he physically gives it to someone else. And that's why you need achiv gom in order for there to be a problem of mi'ilah. And akshay rachmana the truma, and then the Torah connects it to truma, ma truma ki yochal. When you eat truma, that's where you have a problem. Prat limazik. That comes to exclude the case where you do damage. So here's a case where pagam is relevant, because by truma, you're eating the truma, there is pagam, and it comes to tell you that it's only when you get hana'ah and pagam are you chayav. If you simply are pogame without any hana'ah, then you're not chayav. That's called mazik. Pogame without hana'ah means that I damaged it without getting any benefit from it. So gabi hekdesh nami, kol davar achila, ki mazik lei patur. Anything that's a dvar achila, if you do damage to it instead of consuming it, then you're going to be patur from mi'ilah, similar to the way you are patur by Shumah. Both Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot go out of their way to say that by bar achila, it's not limited. It happens to be that the case by Shuma, the only place or only situation in which you're chayav, keren and chomesh, when you eat it b'shogeg, is the case when you ate it. So therefore, the example that's brought is eating, but that's not necessarily limited to eating. Tosafot says the same thing. This is not limited to bar achila, even though that's what it sounds like. It is anything where you're mazik, where there's pagam, and you're mazik without getting ana'ah, that will also be excluded from the din of mi'ilah. And then he brings from the Ri that maybe even there's a chiddush by achila. So he says that the Tana brought to yochal, because teach us, techinami achil derech hezek. If you eat in a damaging way, you will also be patur. And that's the chiddush over here. For instance, when you eat an achila gasa, where the achila is not a achila of hana'ah, then that's an achilah of hezek. So you can have it not just where it's achilah prat the mazik, where mazik is a different category. You can even have achilah that is a mazik, and that achilah you would not be chayav for, not by truma, not by mi'ilah. So he says maybe they mentioned achilah l'chidush to tell you even in the action of achilah, there's certain achilot that are not, certain achilot the hezek, and those that are the hezek are not subject to mi'ilah and are not chayav by truma, a karen, Vichomesh. So those are again the three different limudim that we have. And here the Gemara gives us the swath of items that are covered by that within mi'ilah, that you have different categories of mi'ilah. You have mi'ilah where you get hana'ah and there's no pagam. You have mi'ilah where you have hana'ah and there is pagam. In those cases you need both the pagam and the hana'ah. And then there's a category where you get neither. There's no pagam, there's no hana'ah. It's simply a change, mi'rishut the rishut, like the kardom over here. And that was the misappropriation that happened. That we learned from all these three different hekeshot that we have between mi'ilah and sotah, mi'ilah and avodat kochavim, and mi'ilah and truma. Right, so now the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah with regards to the golden goblet that is used. That's an example of something that does not have pagam. And the Gemara says, Ketzah nadna kapa, amar le'rav kahana le'rav zvid, v'dahava lav bar ifkumeo. Is gold really something that's not a wasting asset, a deteriorating asset? So what about the gold of the daughter-in-law of the family of either it's Noun or Nun? It clearly deteriorated. It is not at the value that it was assessed at the time that they gave it to the daughter-in-law or the bride. So your response to him, Dilma Dahava, the Rami and Kalatechu. Maybe it's similar to the gold that your daughters-in-law wear, and that your daughter-in-laws have, that they don't treat it so carefully. He's saying your daughters-in-law, also their gold deteriorated. The reason is because they don't put it away. They don't store it carefully. They throw it in the windowsill. They throw it off. They let it expose to the elements, to the sun, and that causes deterioration. If it's kept properly, then it won't deteriorate. So just like your daughters-in-law, their gold deteriorated because they're not careful about it. So too, that of the family of Noun or Nun also deteriorated because they were less than careful, haphazard about taking care of it. And so that's what happens to gold when you don't take care of it. Behold. And another issue is the loika ne ne upigam la altar dola mi loika pigima. Even when we say that there is a requirement by items that are wasting assets, that you not only get hana, but you also have pigam in them, that's when we're speaking about immediate pagam. But that doesn't mean that the item never deteriorates. It doesn't mean that it's not going to depreciate over a long duration, but that's not relevant to us. So even if gold deteriorates over many years, still with regards to single usage of it, that's not going to change the gold. It's going to be no more diminished by one use, two uses, or three uses. It might be over a period of years that it deteriorates, but that's not true of every single usage. And since there's no pagam out there, over there, all the requirement is hana'ah. You don't need to have a pagam in the item because it's not a immediately wasting asset. Then with the last piece of the Mishnah, we said, anene min achatat. Someone who gets benefit from a chatat, this is going to establish a principle which we're actually going to see on the Amud Bet in the Mishnah, michte. Ibe behemat mima. We said with regards to the chatat, that while it's still alive, then you need hana'ah and pagam. When it's dead, then you only need hana, no pigam. And the Gemara wants to understand this. If it's a behemat mima, if it is a good korban, I mean it's a behemat mima, chatat that go in the mizbeach, hainu kosil zahav. How is that different than a golden goblet, whereby there's no loss that's incurred by you utilizing the animal? If you ride the animal, that's hekdesh, that's ra'oi the mizbeach. The mizbeach has no requirement as to what the size of the animal is, how fat, how skinny, how strong, or how weak it is to go on the mizbeach. That means if you ride the chatat, you can still bring it as a korban afterwards. You have not depreciated its value per its utility, which is to go on the mizbeach. That utility exists before you rode the animal, after you rode the animal. And the next person who rides the animal, the next person who rides the animal doesn't change the fact that this animal is still ra'ui to go on the mizbeach. There's no restriction against work being done to an animal of Hekdesh. That's only a requirement by Egla Rufa and by Parat Duma. It's not a requirement by regular Hekdesh. Therefore, there is no pagam here because the depreciation that you're claiming is not something that impedes its utility because you could still put it on the Mizbeach. So Amar Papa, Bibalat Mumaskinan. We're dealing with a case where the animal is a Balat Mum. The reason for the difference is that it depends on what the purpose of the animal is. Pigam is only a relevant factor when you're after the monetary value of the item. It's when its utility comes from its value. When you have an animal that's a balat mum, the only thing you're going to do with it is redeem it. You're going to sell it, monetize it in order to use the proceeds to buy another animal. That means that its inherent value to you is its monetary value. In that case, pagam is a necessary requirement in order for you to be chayav for mehilah. Because there, any diminishment of value is a diminishment in the purpose or utility of this animal. And therefore, if you ride it, you work with it, and you weaken it, you've diminished the value, and therefore you have now hana with pagam, and that's why you also do need pagam. By behemat miyama, where the utility is not for its value, the utility is for its getting on the mizbeach, over there, value is irrelevant, because korbanot have no structure or minimum value requirement, maximum value requirement, and it doesn't matter how big or small your korban is. It qualifies as a korban no matter what. So in that case, there is no pigam, and there becomes a koshal zahav, and hana'ah itself is a sufficient reason to be chayav in mi'ilah. So that means that our Mishnah that says that you need both hana'ah and pigam must be speaking about a balat mum. Now, after the animal dies, then the animal is, in a sense, worthless because you can't be podet, you can't redeem it because ain't podim kodeshim lachilam the klavim. So in that case, there is no value but also no utility. And in that case, it's simply the misappropriation or utilizing something of hekdesh that makes you chayam. Therefore, all you need is hana'ah. You don't need pagam anymore because there is no value to speak about. The only thing you have left is the hekdesh that is upon this animal. And that hekdesh, if you get enough from it, you're going to be chayav because there's no means of pagam because it's worthless already in terms of your ability to redeem it or do anything with it. And the hekdesh is still upon it. And that makes it that you're chayav. Now, this is an important principle, which is what the next mission is going to say. That is that any item that is for its value or its value is important, there you have to have pagam associated with it. Any item where the value is irrelevant, then it's the utility or the hana'ah that you get from it that's going to make you chayav. Now the Mishnah says, Nene kibechatzi pruta, upagam kibechatzi pruta. First it gets hana'ah of a chatzi pruta, and pagam of a chatzi pruta. What you can't do is combine those two to get to a single pruta worth of mi'ilah, because those are different means of utilization of the item. One is hana'ah, one is pagam. For instance, if a person wore a beged hevekdesh, which is something where he'll get hana'ah from the item, and then he rips it up, and he's pogame it by a chatzi pruta. Now it has to be a ripping that's not necessarily a mazik, but I mean, the ripping has utility to it. You need it as a patch for something, you need to take it off. So then you have here hana'ah and pogima coming from the same item, but they don't combine because you need a hanava pruta and you need a pigimava pruta independent of each other. They can't combine to create that single pruta of hana'ah plus pigam that makes you chayav in mi'ilah. So if you read it as that, the Chatzi Pruta and the Begam of Chatzi Pruta were on the same item, then the Mishnah is going to teach you that there's no din of Tziruf. You can't put them together. On the other hand, if you read it as they're separate issues, there's a Hana of Chatzi Pruta and a Begam of Chatzi Pruta, then the Mishnah is going to teach you that both the Hana and the Begam must reach the threshold of a Pruta, not having anything to do with being mitzdareif, but simply each one has to meet the threshold. One of them meeting the threshold is not a sufficient reason to be chayav in mi'ilah. Oh, shenene b'shav b'putah b'davar achad, u'bagam b'shav b'putah b'davar acher. Or the situation is where you got hana'ah of a putah from one item, and you got the begam in another item. So for instance, Rashi over here says, if you wore a beged of Hekdesh, and then you spill the liquid of Hekdesh, where you got no hana from it, or you spilled a liquid of Hekdesh onto a beged of Hekdesh, a separate beged of Hekdesh, whereby the hana is coming from one beged, and the begam is coming from another beged, or it's coming from another item. Those two do not combine in order for there to be mi'ila. Lo ma'al, achiyane b'shave pruta, v'ifgom b'shave pruta. You need both hana b'shave pruta, Pigama v'shava puta v'davar echad. That's be on one item. But one item has to produce both the hana'ah and the pigam, so that you have to be utilizing something by which your hana'ah that you get is also the cause for the diminishment of the value of that item. If you are nane from an item, and then you do the pigam in another item, that does not create this requirement for mi'ilah or meet the threshold of mi'ilah. Strangely, Rashi says that the conclusion from here is that Kasavar the Truma Beinan the Bekimato Vanato Keachad. It has to be like Truma where the Bekima Nana happens simultaneously. Doesn't seem to be that that's what our mission is addressing. Our mission seems to be addressing that they have to be Bedavar Echad, not Bezman Echad. And you can see that in the Balei Tosafot and Rabbeinu Gershom, who both have a Girsa that indicates that what we learn from the Mishnah is that they have to be Bedavar Echad. They have to be on a single item that the Hana and the Begam comes. So you might have to say that the Ke'echad on Rashi is not literally at simultaneously, but Ke'echad really means B'davar Echad. Otherwise, it's somewhat problematic, although it does match with the examples that Rashi brings, which could have a problem of both not being simultaneous, as well as not being on the same item, because he speaks about wearing one baguette and then ruining another baguette or spilling out liquids. So those are items that don't have to be done necessarily simultaneously. Therefore, he's saying that the requirement is both simultaneous and b'davar echad, although Rashi, again, only mentions this issue of simultaneous. We brought the examples that Rashi brings, or the miyuchas that Rashi brings over here. Rishonim, achronim, argue about the exact situations or cases in order to come up with the scenarios of and whether the examples that Rashi brings are the correct examples. But there are many different permutations that you can come up with, try to figure out what the Mishnah is after because of a number of factors. One is that the way that Rashi describes it over here, the pagam turns out to be mazik and not pagam. And by mazik, you have a separate relief from the ilah because you're not chayab for mazik. And the way that he described it, you just poured out the liquids or you ruined the beged, that's called mazik and that's why you're patur. It has nothing to do with the pagam and the hana'ah. You have to come up with a case of pagam where it's not a pagam of nezek. So that's something to take into consideration, which others come up with cases to avoid the issue of mazik. And the same question with, as to whether it relates to the same item, that is it on two different items, and that's why they don't combine, or even on the same item, if you did the pagam and the na'ah on the same item, that's enough to make you patur. The other question which is raised is what is the din with regards to disparities between hana'ah and pegimah? When you have both hana'ah and pegimah an item, and you meet the minimum threshold, you have hana'ah of a pruta and you have pegimah of a pruta. Now, what happens if the hana'ah is much greater than the pegam? You had a pegam of pruta, but you had hana'ah of 10 prutot on the same item, or vice versa. You had Hanava Pruta, but you did Pagam of 10 Prutot. What governs in terms of the repayment over here? What is the factor that determines how much you are Chayav to pay for the Mi'ilah? Is it the Hana'ah? Is it the Pagam? Or is it both of them? What is the emphasis of the Torah? Do we see one of them as the primary problem and the other one just as a T'nai, a condition to be Chayav? Or do we see them both as the issue? So if you see the major issue with regards to Me'ilah, which is seemingly what we saw yesterday, that it is a problem of gezel, it's a problem of theft, then is the problem of theft that you're getting hana from the item, and therefore you would emphasize the hana aspect of it, and not the pagam aspect, and that you'd pay for hana, not for pagam. Or is the problem of theft that you're causing diminution in value? If you say that the major aspect is the ruining of Hekdesh, it's the fact that you're causing losses to Hekdesh, and only there's a condition here that your loss has to have hana'ah associated with it, then the issue would be pagam, and then you would pay for pagam and not for hana'ah. If you thought that both are the issue here, there's a pagam and hana'ah, you can't misappropriate Hekdesh, you can't ruin Hekdesh, then it'd be the higher of the two that you'd have to pay for. That's just something that the Gemara does not address, but the Rishonim, they focus on the hana'ah, which seems to be what the Rambam says, or those that focus primarily on the pagam aspect of it, which is what Rashi says, and those that refer focus on both of them, which is what seemingly the Balei HaTosafot say. All right, so now the Mishnah continues and says, Ein ma'el achar mo'el b'muktashim. Regards to muktashim, once someone is mo'el, the next party can't be mo'el, because part of the misappropriation is that you took it out of the possession of Hekdesh into the realm of Chulin. That's part of the problem over here. Once you take it into the world of Chulin, there's no longer any ability to have Me'ilah again, because now it is Chulin. It's already been profaned. You can't profane it again. But there are certain items where that's not true, that the items retain their kedusha despite your profaning them. Ela behema klusarei bilvad behema, which is what we just discussed in the previous amud. Anything that's ra'oi the mizbeach, anything belongs on the mizbeach, then when you're mo'el, you can't change the fact that this korban belongs on the mizbeach and this belongs to Hashem. Just because you misused it or you benefited from it, that doesn't change the fact that this animal is going on the mizbeach. Therefore, there is mo'el achar mo'el or mi'ilah achar mi'ilah, because your profaning of the item doesn't bring it into the world of chulin. And b'kli sharet, the other exception to the rule is a kli sharet, which is what we discussed in the Mishnah, the golden goblet. Those items that are kli sharet, they are kadosh. Just because you utilize them doesn't change the fact that they're still a kli sharet and still have that kedusha associated with them, and therefore there is mi'ilah achar mi'ilah. Or in essence, the differentiation is the same one we saw before, is these two items are not there for their value. It's about their utility in being a korban on the mizbeach, or the utility using them in the mikdash, and therefore they cannot be profaned from that utility because it's not about their value. Other items where it's about the value, once they're profaned, then the value is now chulin, and you can no longer be mo'el again. So that's why here, din of ein mo'el achar mo'el b'kdashim el behema b'kli sharet dovad. Ketzad, what's an example? Rachav al gabi behema, u'bachav erov v'rachav, kulam ma'alu, that's by a korban l'mizbeach. Doesn't matter how big or small the animal is, how strong or weak it is, it can go on the mizbeach. Also, shata b'kos shel zav, bachav erov v'shata, if you take a golden goblet or a golden kli sharet and you drink from it, and then your friend comes along and drinks from it, and then another friend comes and drinks from it, meaning you have three parties drinking from it, kulam ma'alu. Over there again, the kli sharet is still a kli sharet after you drank from it. You did not in any way pogame in it. And even if you were to be pogame in it, not necessarily for its monetary value. And therefore, it retains its kedusha. Talash min achatat, u'bachev yirov talash, u'bachev yirov talash, kulan ma'alu. If you come and pull something off a chatat, like you pull a hair off a chatat, another one pulls a hair off a chatat, another one pulls a hair off a chatat, all of those individuals were mo'el in the chatat. So again here, it has kedushat haguf, it's roi the mizbeach, and you're pulling the hair off of it doesn't change that fact, or doesn't do anything to alter its utility. And therefore, everybody is mo'el in this case. So you have a case where they're rochev on it, they ride it. You have a case where they're just pulling the hair off. In all these cases, it's still going to be a chatat, it's still going to be a korban, and therefore, by kodshei mizbeach, there's going to be mi'ilah achar mi'ilah. Now Tosfa points out that in the Tosefta, it says if someone is baka bekardom shel hekdesh, then someone else does it, then someone else does it, they're all chayav and mi'ilah. And it's not talking about or speaking about a case of a kardom that is a kli sharet. So then, how does that reconcile with our Mishnah over here that says the only two items that have mi'ilah achar mi'ilah So Tosafot explains it's a scenario in which they took possession of the item and then returned it or paid for it, so then it returns to Hekdesh's possession. Or that there's a difference in what is causing the Mi'ilah, which is if the Mi'ilah is being caused by your changing possession, like we said on the previous Amud, that when he chops the wood with it, splits the wood with it, that is a grounds for Mi'ilah because of Shinoi Rishut from Hekdesh to Chulin. If that's what's happening, then there's only one case of Mi'ilah because it's been profaned. On the other hand, if he uses it without knowing that it belongs to Hekdesh or without intending for it to leave the possession of Hekdesh, for instance, the Gizbar uses it, in that case, there will be Mi'ilah Achar Mi'ilah because the item was never taken out of the possession of Hekdesh. Rabbi Omer, Kol Davar She'ein Lo, the Girsa in Rashi, Rabbeinu Gershom, the Balei Tosafot is She'ein Lo Pigam. Anything that does not have Pigam, Yesh Bo Moel Achar Moel. Those items, by definition, have Mi'ilah Achar Mi'ilah. This goes back to what we're saying. The reason that the Girsa in the Mishnah is She'ein Lo Pigyon is because they're synonymous. Something that does not have Pigam also is something that does not have Pigyon associated with it. Because Pigam means that there's monetary value that you are damaging or reducing. If it's monetary value, then it's subject to Pigyon. Something that has no relevance in the world of monetary value, then obviously it's not going to have Pigyon, and also it's not going to have Pigam. So the two come hand in hand. So that's why the Mishnah says She'ein Lo Pigyon, because She'ein Lo Pigam also doesn't have Pigyon to it. Therefore, since the two are synonymous, the Girsu got mixed up. But you see from all of the Rishonim here that the Girsu and the Mishnah seem to be Kol Davar She'ein Lo Pigam, the question is, what's different from Rabbi than the Tanakhama of the Mishnah, which is what the Gemara is going to discuss? Mani Matnitan, who's the author of our Mishnah? Rabbi Nechemia. It has to be Rabbi Nechemia, the Tanya. Ein Mohel Achar Mohel, Ela Behema Bilvad. Tanakhama says that the only place where there's Mila Achar Mila is by a Behema of Mizbeach. That's Kadosh B'Kdushat Mizbeach. That's the only place where there's a Din of Mila Achar Mila. Rabbi Nechemia Omer, Behema Ukli Sharet. So now we know why Rabbi Nechemia is the author of our Mishnah, because he has both Behema and Kli Sharet, which means Behema, that's what with him is Beach, or the word Hakrava, and Kli Sharet. And that's what our Mishnah said. My time at the Tanakhama. What's the reasoning behind the Tanakhama's position? Kasavar bin Yona de Behema Tiv. It's speaking about a Behema, Dichtiv Be'el Hasham. Because it mentions in the Pasuk, the El Hasham, that is by the Parsha of Mi'ilah, it uses the term El Hasham twice. And what the Gemara is pointing out is that the second time it uses it, it is unnecessary. Because you're already in the Parsha of Mi'ilah, and you know that the Korban that you're bringing is an El Hasham. So then why do you need to tell me again that's an El Hasham that you're bringing? Nefesh ki timo mal, v'chata v'shkargah mikodshe Hashem, v'yavi et Hashemo l'Hashem, ayol tamim in atzom, v'erchah kesef shkalim, v'shekel ha-kodesh l'Hasham. Then the pasuk afterwards says, v'et asher chata min ha-kodesh, yishalim, v'et chamishito yosef alav, v'natan oto l'kohen, v'akohen yichaper alav. You could end the pasuk there without any problem. And then it says, v'el Hasham v'nislak lo. Why is it v'akohen yichaper alav, v'el Hasham v'nislak lo? Why is there an additional El Hasham? That El Hasham that's extraneous makes it sound like that for a behema. That extraneous El Hasham says, for those things that are kodshei mizbeach, there's a din of mi'ilah. He's been mechaper not only with an El Hasham, but because of the El Hasham. The El Hasham itself is where the mi'ilah happened, and that's the item whereby mi'ilah can happen on a recurring basis. There's no profaning of the item. Now that might also be enhanced by the change in the tense in the pasuk. The pasuk says v'natano tolo kohen, which is in past tense, and then it switches to here v'kohen yichaper alav v'el Hasham, which changes into the future tense. So maybe that change in tense is to indicate a continuous interaction with the item, and that's how we know that el Hasham or behemot that are muktashim lakrava l'mizbeach are subject to mi'ilah elchar mi'ilah. Rabbi Yechemia Amar Lecha. He says Kli Sharet are included because Kavachomer. Im Acherim Mevi L'Kdushatam Hu Atzmo Lo Kol Shekein. Kli Sharet has a unique power. It's similar to the Mizbeach in that way. And the Gemara in Zvachim, there Reish Lakish asks Rabbi Yochanan this question, which is, do Kli Sharet have the same power of Mizbeach to change something that's pasul into something that's kasher. But even if you don't go that far, kli sharet are able to be makdish, other items. It changes the status of an item from being a certain level of kedusha to an elevated kedusha. And we saw that earlier in the Masechta, that items have kedushat damim, which is kedushat hapeh. And then after, when they're placed into a kli sharet, then they're subject to additional restrictions, like amenachot, that we saw back in the second parak. Molim behem mishuk tushu. There's milah, once they were kadosh with kedushat hapeh. Kidshu v'kli, once they're put in kli sharet. Hukshuli pasel b'tvul yom, mechusar kippurim, v'lina. There's additional levels of kedushat that are added. If a kli sharet has the capacity to be makdish other things, then it certainly has the capacity to, quote-unquote, be makdish itself, or to retain its kedusha. So if it has capacity to convey kedusha to other items, then it also has the capacity to maintain its kedusha, even when you profane it. And that's from Nehemiah's view here, that why you have mi'ilah achar mi'ilah with regards to kli sharet, and that's how he argues on the Tanakhama. Now the Balei Tosafot point out that we just correlated in the Mishnah that how do we know whether something is subject to mi'ilah achar mi'ilah or not? Rabbi gave us the indication, but it's true of the other positions as well, of the Tanakhama as well, which is that it has to do with whether it's for its monetary value or some other purpose, which then means that by definition, the Chachamim or the Tanakhama, who disagrees with Rabbi Nehemiah and says that kli sharet are not subject to mi'ilah achar mi'ilah, that must mean, and that's what Tosafot says over here, Nira, the Rabbonon, Tzarech Lefaresh, the Sabi Rabbonon, Shu Yotze Lechulin, Ayedei Mi'ilah, Bim Ken Yesh Lo Pidyon. That by definition, if there's no Mi'ilah Achar Mi'ilah, that means that they're subject to being profaned, and there is Pagam, and that means they also could be redeemed. That would be the conclusion you come to. And the other way around, with regards to Rabbi Nehemiah, you would have to believe that there is no Pidyon, and that there is no pigam that's associated with it. Now that's a little difficult because the Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek said that only golden items are not subject to pigam. Makes it sound like kli sharet made of other materials are subject to pigam. So there Tosafot backs away a little bit from this and says, maybe Rav Nehemiah, v'omikomakom modeh, d'yesh lo pidyon, elegabi mi'ilah shayni mishum kal v'chomer. He says that maybe here you have something different. Here you have a unique case by which there is pidyon, there is pigam to a kli sharet. Despite that fact, there's still mi'ilah achar mi'ilah, and that is because the kal v'chomer. The kal v'chomer indicates that it maintains its own kedusha despite being profane. But maybe that kal v'chomer is uniquely associated with mi'ilah. But the inyan pidyon, shema lo shayach hal kal v'chomer. Maybe that kal v'chomer is not relevant when you're speaking about issues of pidyon, and therefore you would have a differentiation between the fact that there is mi'ilah achar mi'ilah for Rabbi Nehemiah, but there still is pidyon and there still is pagam associated with kli sharet. So that's a important corollary to this machlok between Nehemiah and the Chachamim, is what's your view with regards to kli sharet, with regards to pagam and the ability to be podeh those items. Right now we finish off with Rabbi Omer, kol davar shein lo pidyon, hainu tainakama, as we noted in the Mishnah, Rabbi sounds exactly like the tainakama. The difference between them, or the nafkamina between them, is etzim, the Tan Rabbanan. Omer arei alai etzim, someone who dedicates etzim to the Mizbeach, lo yifchot mishnei gzirim, he has to bring 2 logs worth of etzim, of wood, to be used on the pyre of the Mizbeach. Rabbi Omer etzim korbanim, it's learnt out of the mincha, it's a derivative of the dinim of mincha, and there from the word korban, we're merabe etzim. And therefore, since they're at korban, tunim melach, all korbanot require salting, and so these gizirim, these 2 etzim require salting, utnuim tnufa, and they require tnufa, although the girsa in menachot is they require hagasha, which makes more sense, they don't require wave offerings, they need to be touched to the mizbeach, or maybe they require both of them, just like a mincha. And amarova, the divrei rabbi, etzim, tunim etzim. Rava says that when you bring a korban like this to put on the mizbeach, they require etzim to burn the etzim. You can't just put these etzim on the pyre. You need a pyre to put these etzim on, and therefore they require etzim like any other korban. Amar Papa, the divrei rabbi, etzim tzrichim kmitza. According to rabbi, etzim like a mincha, since they're considered to be like a korban, require a kmitza to be taken off of them to be placed on the mizbeach. We discussed in the Gemara Menachot exactly how you do this. But it has to be something where you can break off a piece, or there it's already in chips, whatever it is that makes it possible that you can do a kmitza. In that case, the nafkamina between them is Rabbi's view with regards to etzim. According to Rabbi, etzim are like a korban. And just like a korban has no pkima and has no pidyon, so too, etzim are not going to be something that has or is subject to those issues. And therefore, there's going to be mi'ilah, achar mi'ilah with regards to etzim. On the other hand, for the chachamim who think etzim are a donation to the mikdash, then it has nothing to do with korban, and therefore you could profane them, and there is no mi'ilah, achar mi'ilah with regards to etzim. Another option is, Rapapa Amar, Rapapa gives the following option, which is, kochim izbeach mimim, benasu balei mumim. Yet kochim izbeach that were roil izbeach, then they became a balmum. Vavar v'shachatan. Instead of redeeming them, he shechs them. Ikemenayu, that would be enough nafkamina between them. Because, Bahatanyo, this would be Nihuta. This is a brayta that shows us this. Kochim izbeach mimim nasu balei mumim, vavar v'shachatan. Rabbi Omer yikavru, you bury them. They're worthless now, you can't do anything with them. That's because Rabbi requires that psulei hamukdashim have hamodah v'arocha. Everybody agrees by kochim bedek abayit you need hamodah v'arocha. The only question is, by psulei hamukdashim or kochim izbeach, do you need hamodah v'arocha? Rabbi requires hamodah v'arocha. You have a problem here, you can't do hamodah v'arocha because you killed the animal, you shechted the animal. There's no way to value the animal, stand it up and have it be assessed. It can't stand up. It's dead. It's already shechted. And therefore, there's no amad aracha makes the animal worthless. If the animal is worthless, then the only requirement for mi'ilah is that you get hana, like in our Mishnah. Dead kodoshim don't have any issue of pegima anymore because they're valueless. So therefore, you are subject to mi'ilah when you get hana from them. And that is a continuous problem. That problem exists over and over again, because we're not talking about value. So too over here, since you can't value the animal, there's no way to redeem it. Since there's no way to redeem it, there's no way to remove tekdesh. No change in value that's going to matter here. Therefore, there's mi'ilah, achar mi'ilah. The chachamim, on the other hand, say, ipadu, you redeem it. They don't require hamad v'arocha. Therefore, over here, this is different than the case of kodeshim shemetu. In kodeshim shemetu, it's an nevela. And nevela ain't podim et kodeshim lechilam leklavim. Here, the kodeshim are dead, not because it's a nevela, but because you shechted it. That means that it is a good shechita. That good shechita results in an animal that can't be eaten. It's just a problem that it's hektish. How do I deal with that? I redeem it. If I redeem it, then you're not podet to lahalachilam to klavim. You're podet to lahalachilam to people, to anybody who wants to eat it, because it is kosher meat. So in that case, there is value to the animal. If there is value to the animal and you're moel, then that's pagam. Diminishment of value, profane, and there can't be mi'ilah, achar mi'ilah. And that'll be the nafkamina between Rabbi and the Chachamim, is this situation. Now, in both instances, what's interesting is that the difference between Rabbi and the Chachamim has nothing to do with the Mishnah. It has nothing to do with their positions in the Mishnah, it has to do with their positions in other cases. It's Rabbi's position with regards to Korban Eitzim. It's Rabbi's position with regards to Sulei Mukdashim, or that they require Mother Rocha. That contributes to Rabbi's position over here, that there is mi'ilah, achar mi'ilah, in other cases besides the cases of behema and kli sharet, because of the fact of his opinion, makes it that there are other items that retain kedusha and are not profaned. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Yutet Amud Bet.